This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I am live at Transformation 2010. It's an event here in San Francisco with the Forays, put on by the American Association of Advertising Agencies. And I am with one of my old school buds, Mike Donahue. He's the executive vice president of the Forays. He programmed this conference. He's been on Dishy Mix before, so if you like what you hear today, you should go back and listen to the other episode we've done together. And I just want to welcome you to the show, Mike. It's great to see you.
It's great to be here. Susan, I remember the last time we talked, I think I mentioned the fact that the word joint has more meanings than any other word in the English language. So,
well, did you smoke one before you got on my show today?
Well,
or what's going on with
it? I didn't. With some people, I probably would need that to relax, Susan, but not with you.
We slip right in, don't
yeah,
we, Mike?
Absolutely.
We've known each other many years. When I first started on the IAB board, when we launched it in 97, you were a very active partner for us. And I really think a big part of the reason that the IAB is successful is that you were early on and very insightful about the power the internet was going to play in advertising.
Well, I think, you know, you and I were early usual suspects. As recently as yesterday, I introduced my son, Nick, who has a drop-dead idea for a website, to Rich Lafergy.
Oh, yeah, good.
Who's going to give him some counsel on how to take that forward. And Rich of course, goes back. And in fact, you could probably say that Rich probably is the one who had the original idea for the interactive advertising.
Definitely
bureau,
is. So exactly. He was an awesome leader. So we're here at Transformation 2010. You've programmed the conference. I've been here. It's just the first morning of the conference. It's a nice full room, so you've managed to bring a lot of people in. I noticed that we started off with a kind of a big presentation with Arianna Huffington, and then we had the Magazine Publishers mm-hmm. Association.
And they basically debuted that initiative. They called us and said, you know, we would really like to bring our top people here. It's going to be a kick-ass conference. The fact that transformation is the theme, that's what we're all about, and we have a really neat initiative. So we had the top three or four publishers in the business telling people about it.
You had Kathy Black, and who else was on there?
Jack Griffin from Meredith, mm-hmm. and Ann Moore from Time Inc. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I've been taking Time Magazine as a subscription since I was about 18 years old, and the last couple of issues have been so thin. They announced an initiative where they're going to run more media to promote magazines across more publications than any ad campaign has ever done, more media than any ad campaign. But I'll tell you, Mike, it did smack a little bit of desperation to me. I hate to say, like there was a lot of justification for magazines that...
I agree, Susan.
It made me kind of sad, really. I come from magazines. I was an ad sales magazine person. That's my root.
I'll tell you what I think their problem is. And they have an issue in dealing with it, but I'll tell you what their problem is. Later on in this conference, I have a session on addressability. And as you heard, Mark Goldstein made a big point about addressability today and gave the math through how important it is to have to address your audiences. And then if you address your audiences and you know you're getting audiences, you're willing to pay more for them. The problem with the magazine industry is that the good news is that their smaller publications are very targeted and always have been. Their larger publications are not targeted. They're the ones in the competitive hot spot.
Like Time.
Like Time.
Difficult.
Inc., exactly.
It's everybody in the world.
Now,
yeah.
People does well because it's almost sort of a print version of social media. But some of the bigger, older, more general audience magazines are in trouble. One of the reasons that Life magazine and Look magazine didn't survive the 70s was because television sort of preempted them. That's an issue that I think these guys probably need to address. But some of their smaller publications, I mean, that 11% increase you saw in circulation since Google was out, I'll bet you that you have a 10% decline in audience for the big mass publications and a 20% increase on the targeted addressable thing. And that's the issue that I think that they have.
I had Josh Gordon on the show recently. He runs a publishing rep firm, and he teaches print salespeople how to sell in a digital age and how to sell integrated programs. He just completed a research study with a couple of digital magazine publishers about the future opportunity of digital magazines and the advertising in digital magazines. Now, you wouldn't know about this because I got the scoop.
Right,
and it's not it's not a research project that's launched yet. It'll be launched probably by the time this show comes out. I'll make sure I send you a link to it. But what he was talking about is that the value of the interactive ads in digital magazines is a tremendously large opportunity that the print publications don't have, and that more and more niche publications are going completely digital. What do you think about that as an opportunity?
I think it's a great opportunity, and I think you're going to hear Chris Anderson, who's the editor of Wired Magazine, later on, I can't remember whether it's today or tomorrow, talk about our tablets, e-tablets, the future of magazines.
Mm-hmm.
He's heading up a project at Condé Nast, and you didn't have Chuck Townsend on the program today, who is the Condé Nast equivalent to Ann Moore and Jack and Kathy. But there's a tremendous opportunity to use these digital tablets, not just as read-only, but as internet access. If you can make them into internet access, as you probably can with the iTablet iterations, then you can create interactive ads. And I think there's a great opportunity, and I think that has the chance to save certainly the magazine business if they are smart about it, and maybe even the newspaper.
Absolutely. This magazine group announced an initiative around e-readers, a coming together of an organization around e-readers. They're going to get some ad standards and all those kinds of things. It seemed late to me, Mike. I felt like I should have heard that 3 years ago here, not now. Do you think they're late to the party?
I agree. I think they are late to the party. I don't think they're too late to the party.
No.
Because I do think that these iterations of e-tablets will facilitate what they want to do. But the first time I saw a Kindle 2.5 years ago, I heard about it. I gave my wife her Mother's Day present. Now, my wife, Anna, is much more digital than I am. And when she got this, she didn't know what it was. This was May of 2008. And my kids, my son Nick, who you just met, were surprised and sort of tisked her because they said, hey, Dad, you know, you're always saying that Dad understands digital, but he doesn't really, really understand it. And you don't even know what a Kindle is. Here's my point. The Kindle, when it came out 2 years ago, should have been jumped on by these guys. They should have looked at it. They should have gone, and they should have said, okay, this exists now.
Yeah, let's get our magazines on the Kindle.
There are ways you can
some
take
do.
It forward. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
some do. And you're right. I think they are. I don't think they're too late, but I do think they're late to the party.
I also notice, and I don't want to be negative about everything, so this is my last bit of a little bit of criticism about what I saw today. Carol Bartz got up. She's the CEO of Yahoo. And it was almost like she was pleading. She actually gave out her email address in the presentation and talked about how they'd had a lot of friction. People had had trouble doing deals with them. And she was kind of apologetic and said that she'd put a czar in charge of taking care of, you know, how difficult it had been to work with Yahoo. Do you think that was mostly just because they have gone through a lot of kind of business earthquakes within their own organization that made that difficult, or what?
I think so, but I think I applauded her. Honestly, I thought she was a little bit too much of a selling for Yahoo than I would
have
liked.
Too. Yeah.
But I applauded her honesty in saying, "Hey, look, we are there. If we have mistakes, you can call us."
Mm-hmm.
The thing that Yahoo. I think Yahoo, and the reason I asked you, Carol, to do this is, I'm sorry, the reason I asked Carol to do this is that I think if Yahoo doesn't transform in a major way, it's going to be bad for the entire display space on the internet, because they are such a large part of the display advertising scene. And display advertising is under siege because of the demand side platforms of the network, because the publishers, rightly or wrongly, decided to relegate a lot of their unsold premium inventory to networks. Now the agencies are getting in it. You're going to hear a debate on this in the next half hour here about whether agencies doing demand side platforms are right. But it all comes back to display advertising. Yahoo is the sweet spot or the sour spot for display advertising. If Yahoo doesn't transform and make it more easy to buy, to come up with new models, the whole display space is going to be, I think, under siege.
Now, you have an opinion about what brand managers need to do. That's one of your, I would say, one of your platforms right now, is you've done some thinking about how change needs to happen at the brand management level. Tell me more about that.
Well, actually, I haven't even gone public with this yet.
But oh, great. So you're going to try it out on Dishy Mix listeners. We're a good group to try it out
here's
on.
Here's my theory. I think that brand managers have to get away from what I call the samurai style of marketing and get into the thousand small slices style of marketing.
Here's okay. what I mean. Tell us what you mean.
The brand managers are so used to, with one large, sharp fell swoop, being able to cut huge amounts out to market in large chunks. And you can't do that anymore. What you need is you need to market by a thousand small slices. They have to change their orientation to be able, instead of making one buy on one place for $2 million, they need to be able to make 40 buys at $50,000. And that's a different model. And the issue is that you have all these different places, long tail, as Chris Anderson says, targetable, addressable. You're willing to pay more for it, but it's a harder and it's a different process because you're going to have to buy a lot of stuff. You're going to have to go into experiential marketing, not just big Super Bowl things, but maybe 40 or 50 small things. And the brand marketers are not attuned to that. Now, the agencies are coming around to that, but the brand marketers are still after the samurai style and not the thousand small slices.
You kind of sound like Guy Kawasaki to me with his let the thousand flowers bloom speech.
Exactly.
I don't know if you've ever heard
that.
But,
I know that, but I haven't.
He's a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a critical thing. And I've mentioned this to Bob Leodis at the ANA. We're probably going to put a group of people together to address this. And it's a really important thing because if the brand managers continue to come at it with getting after large chunks rather than small slices, it's not going to be good for the whole business.
It was interesting when I listened to Carol Bartz, and she was talking about the Walmart campaign and how Walmart wants to reach mothers, and she could reach 25.5 million mothers a month five times. Right after that, at the break, I saw a lovely person, and I'll leave her site nameless, but a super high quality, more niche site that appeals to mothers, and she can reach 5 million. She has 5 million people who come to her site a month. And she said, you know, the scale is just staggering to me of Yahoo. Now, that's a samurai, but Carol was calling for true creative innovation and working with them. She was really almost pleading for the agencies to come forward with some really big ideas and innovation
to reach that scale. You know, you're going to hear Kathy from Unilever up here between what Suave has done and what Axe has done. They have gone after very targeted. Suave's got that great campaign where they're really, you know, they've appealed to mothers, and they come at it in a way that while Suave is a relatively small brand, they understand what the issues are that Suave mothers need to address. And I think that's a good example.
Then I also saw Chris Little. I met him at Mevio, which was a podcasting company, and now he's with a company called Double Verify.
Have you heard about that? Oh, yeah, I know Aaron Netzer very well, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Tell us about that. That's a brand new strategy, which I think is interesting.
Double Verify is a company that is able to tell advertisers whether their ads ran as they were targeted, and more importantly, if they ran where they were targeted, but if they ran where they weren't targeted.
Yes.
Not just from an audience standpoint, but in places where you don't want it. Unsavory.
Right. Contextually, you know, not so good.
Exactly. I mean, on the more benign side, you don't want a Kraft Velveeta ad appearing on ESPN.
Yes.
Similarly, you probably don't want an Axe ad appealing on a women's site where the women would take real offense.
Exactly, because it's very irreverent advertising.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which appeals to their young boy audience.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's interesting, you're talking about the samurai versus the thousand flowers, and what did you call it?
Thousand slices.
A thousand slices.
One big slice versus thousand small slices.
Death by paper cuts,
it could be
if you don't have Double Verify, right?
Exactly. Yes, that's very true. And Double Verify, I think, will be... is a great model. The person who is one of the people behind it is one of the people who was behind DoubleQuick. So I think it's a great opportunity for marketers and agencies to make sure that their ads run where they're supposed to run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been successful. Agencies are using it. Publishers are coming around to use it. And even some of the ad networks are beginning to.
Well, the ad networks are going to have to use it because they're the ones with a bad reputation.
Absolutely.
For misplaced media.
Exactly.
And that's what DoubleVerify is going to yes. help fix, which is great. So, you know, if we have this, you know, this fractured media landscape, and you're a proponent of even going into more of these thin slice media types,
yes.
then we're going to need that kind of a thing. I also noticed another big sponsor of this event, Transformation 2010, is Centro. And they
yes.
have a new technology, which also dovetails into your position. Can you tell us much about that? I'm going to get a demo this afternoon.
I think Centro is a great. I'm glad that a Centro exists, because one thing that's always puzzled me is why hasn't someone come forward to try to aggregate local sites? I mean, local, you know, trying to get to put together campaigns that recognize the fact that you've got national appeals and you have local appeals, and I think they have a great model. And when they came to us, there's someone else doing it whose name shall remain nameless, and I was about to approach this person when they came to us, and I said, I would love for you to come to our conference. They are doing it. They're a major player here, and I think they have a great model, and I'll be curious to see just how quickly agencies take it up.
They also have a new technology called Transis, I think it is.
Transis, T-R-A-N-S-I-S.
And that's
yes.
really a media RFP and placement technology. Is that what it is?
I'm not exactly sure.
I'm going to get a demo of that today.
Okay,
so we won't talk about the things we don't know enough about.
Well,
yet.
You tell me afterward, because I'd like
you
to know.
I'll
okay?
do that.
Yeah.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a break to thank my sponsors. And when we come back, I want to talk more about what's on your mind, Mike.
Okay.
All right.
Be glad to.
Awesome.
Okay.
I'm your host, Susan Bratton. You're listening to Dishy Mix with Mike Donahue. He's the executive vice president of the 4 A's, a mucky muck and a fabulous guy. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. This is Susan Bratton, author of the Talk Show Tips System. If you're a podcaster, information product marketer, blogger, radio, or TV host, and you conduct interviews, Talk Show Tips can turn your audience into raving fans who promote your work for you. Talk Show Tips 72 Secret Master Host Techniques teaches you how to prepare and produce riveting interviews. And learn how to promote your work with free social influence marketing strategies. Want to know how to effortlessly generate killer questions for your next interview? Get my free Easy Question Generator mini course today at talkshowtips.com. We're back with Mike Donahue of the 4A's. So, Mike, what else is big on your mind? What's happening that you think is the transformation of 2010?
Well, I think mobility is as a platform, and as the gadgets that allow that platform to be implemented, has enormous potential. I think the problem, and one of the reasons I think it has enormous potential, the potential basically to migrate marketers' attention away from the internet to it, is a very simple observation. The first observation is that behavior is very hard to change. And the behavior that's hard to change is that one of the mistakes that the internet made early on, when it was commercialized in late 1994, when the National Science Foundation gave up the domain registry to the public, is that it was free from the start. The internet started in 1967 as a defense project at Carnegie Tech. It was a defense project. It was subsidized by the government. It became an academic project subsidized by the colleges and also by the feds. And then when it became a commercial venture, unfortunately, it stayed a free thing. It's very hard once you give things away to start asking people to pay for them. But then think about your phone. Who controls your phone? The telecoms control your phone.
And you're paying for it.
They've never given away anything.
Yeah.
Think about the number of apps that have been put up on the app store, and only about 10% of them are paid, but it's billions and billions of dollars of revenue. People are used to paying for something on their phone. They're not used to paying for something on their internet. You're going to see, as that goes forward, you're going to see people more and more willing to use that. And the other thing is, as advertisers begin to charge agencies with creating apps, you're going to create brand apps. And it was mentioned today by, the first Transformer, the idea about content being king, and that brands will be able to create content and maybe don't even need much traditional advertising. And by traditional advertising, I don't just mean analog, I mean digital advertising too. So I think it's going to be interesting between people willing to pay for things on the phone and not pay on the internet. It means that all these things about paywalls might not be as successful as the phones and paying for an app. I don't know how many apps you pay for or my son pays for, but he does pay for some of them. I mean, most of them are free,
yeah.
But he's willing. If it's a really cool app, he'll pay a couple bucks for it.
Definitely.
Just like they said you couldn't transform you couldn't turn around the music business. Apple gets 99 cents for a lot of individual songs.
That's true.
Okay. But once again, that's on a handheld appliance. It's not on a computer, primarily. I mean, most of the stuff you do on iPods are on your phone or on the iPod. So
if you were a brand marketer today, you would be looking at three things: mobility, micro-segmenting your media buys, and any other thing that you're enamored with or think is directionally worth a focus?
Well, I'd be charging agencies with developing applications that are functional and fun, that integrate the brands. But also to go back to my 1,000 slices, that the brand managers are willing to have relatively small groups of people, hundreds of thousands rather than lots and lots of millions, access these apps and like them. Because those people are going to be engaged, as Ariane was saying. They're going to be energetic. They're going to be empathetic. That's the very kind of thing that you want to happen.
Now, Arianna Huffington opened the Transformation 2010 event. What would you say, net, her speech?
I think it was marvelous. I think she has such an incredible... the amazing thing about Arianna is that even though English is her second language, she can put words together and concepts together. Her point about sleep deprivation, how important it is to get enough sleep, because if you don't get enough sleep, a lot of bad things happen. If you do have sleep, then all of a sudden all the dreaming you can do and all the, you know, people talk about, gee, I thought it hit me in the shower. Well, it hit you and I in the shower because we dreamed about it and we had enough sleep that it came forward. Okay?
Yeah.
I think she's marvelous. I think she has a great platform, and she can lead off my conference anytime. She spoke at my conference in 2006.
She really has charisma.
I put her up there in 2006 when she was starting. I talked to her earlier. She remembered that. And she really gets it.
You want to know why I think all the best thinking, not all the best thinking, but some good thinking happens in the shower? I have a funny theory about it. I think that, you know how when
is
you...
Is this something we can talk about in public, or is this, okay, never mind.
Okay. Well, it's dishy mix. We can talk about anything,
okay,
Mike,
right,
you
okay,
know that.
Right.
I think that when you bend down to soap up your feet, all the blood is rushing down to your head. You're getting extra enervation, and you're thinking of ideas. There's something about that flipping down,
yeah,
that bending over.
That also argues for not putting a soap dish at eye height, so you have to put it on the floor and you have to bend down for it. Right?
Well, don't you always drop the soap?
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I just met your son, Nick.
Yes.
And he is he taller than you are?
He's 6 feet seven.
He's
yes,
six
he
seven,
is.
And you're
like
6'5"?
Yeah, I'm 6'5". Yes,
uh-huh.
I am. Yeah, right.
I would
yeah.
love to get a big hug from you.
Yeah. Oh, well,
because I gotta
got
to reach
it.
Up.
Okay, that's
before
right.
Before and
yeah,
after
yeah.
Dishy Mix, we do our
yeah.
hugs, right?
No, he's...
What's Nick doing now?
Well, he's got a really cool website that I'm under NDA and I can't talk about, but
okay.
I've got people like Rich Lafergie. He's going to go down and meet Mark Kwame today to talk about it. And some people here, Dave Morgan, who started
Simulcast. Simul Media
yeah. 24/7
yeah.
way back when.
Dakota.
And Dave Smith here from Media Smith is
yeah.
going to sort of be a mentor to him. And he has this great idea. He is at a point in time where he has succeeded in college. He's also succeeded in a sport that he never played until he was a senior in high school, and he became an All-American in water polo, which,
oh,
as you know, is a big sport out here. He's a goalie.
It is a big sport. Mm-hmm.
And regrettably, he's not going to try out for the national team because he basically wants to make out. He was invited, but he declined because he wants to take his idea It's a campus-driven idea.
Okay.
It's a product.
Well, that was what Facebook was.
It's a service that is created by college students for college students, and it's a really, really cool idea. So with people like Lafergy and Kwame and Dave Smith and Dave Morgan and a friend of ours who lives down the peninsula who's funded a lot of stuff, hopefully he'll get it off the ground. If he doesn't, the experience will be incredible.
Well, if he doesn't, he'll have another idea.
Yeah.
I think it's really admirable that you're teeing up a lot of good networking opportunities for him. Parents who don't do that or children who don't leverage their parents for their connections are leaving so much on the table. It's absolutely the right thing.
Yeah.
You've got a sharp kid with a great idea and great contacts. And
well,
so
I think that's
important.
Now, may I put a shameless plug in for my wife?
You have to.
Okay. Her name is Anna Donahue, but her maiden name is Anna Knipe. K-N-I-P-E, as
okay.
in King, Nick, Izzy, Paul, Edward. She creates and designs fine gold jewelry.
Okay.
You can find her stuff at annaknipe.com, annaknipe.com, and she does some really cool stuff. In fact, Wenda Millard is going to have a trunk show for Anna's stuff sometime in the next couple of months.
Now, Wenda's moved to, she left Martha Stewart
Wenda
on the media.
Wenda is now working for Michael Kasson at MediaLink.
And yes, what is MediaLink? I don't know that.
MediaLink is a consultancy. It's a bring-together company. It has very senior people who have enormous experience in the media business. Michael Kasson was Dennis Holt's right-hand person when they started Western Media 25 years ago. Wenda, of course, is a legend in this business. What they do is they provide high-level advice and consultancy for some of the biggest companies on the face of the planet. They do a lot of work with Microsoft. They do work now with the NBC Comcast group. They do work with AT&T, major consulting contract.
And who is Wenda interviewing for you today on the tomorrow on the agenda?
Wenda is interviewing Kathy. Oh, I'm pulling a blank. Kathy from Unilever, who is runs a good bit of the USA. I'm pulling a blank on her name.
That's
okay. She's going to talk about Suave.
Yeah.
And Axe.
Suave and Axe, and
right.
They of course did the beauty campaign for
and
Dove.
Dove. All three
Dove's
of them.
Dove's amazing.
And the thing about Procter is a great company. I think they would acknowledge that Lever's ahead of them in digital marketing because of what they did with those three brands, what they did with Axe, what they did with Suave, what they did with Dove, and using the internet, using all digital properties, and also recognizing the value of social media in evangelizing those products through social media. And I think that Unilever has been way ahead of that.
What's your sense of, you're so tapped into the agency world, obviously. What's the sentiment in the big agency world about social media? Do they think it's a short-term kind of a fluffy thing, or are they embracing it deeply? What is
they
it about
embrace
it they
it,
like?
They embrace it. I think everybody, and the biggest agency, the smallest agency, embraces it. The big challenge, as it is with so many things that are basically internet-driven, is how do you monetize it? And nobody has really come up with, the ultimate solution. Now, what's going to be interesting, and this goes back to my 1,000 slices versus samurai, is that the monetization might also have to happen in very small bits and pieces. You know, everybody hopes that they can find some, killer monetizing idea that becomes the way that you can create a sustainable a financial model that continues the success these have had. But Nick, my son, two years ago, was on a panel at a conference that I ran, and I put him on the panel because he said to me, and he created the panel. I created the panel with a planner out here, Ed Cotton from Butler Shine, and the whole purpose of it was to talk about what Facebook needed to do in order to continue to be successful. And at that point in time, my son said, "Dad, Mark Zuckerberg has just created all these great new applications. How many do you think I use?" And I said, "I don't know, Nick." And he said, "I use three." He said, "Dad, stop screwing up my experience," except he didn't say screwing. So we put this panel together called Stop Screwing Up My Experience. We had all these kids from around the country, and the point was they didn't want these apps, and they didn't want to pay for ads to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, Facebook is an incredible thing. I think YouTube has a better shot because they have video, and video, I think, can be monetized more easily. But that's going to be a challenge. And social media is the same problem. I think this afternoon you're going to hear Pete Blackshaw, who had the very first social media site called Planet Feedback.
Yes, he did.
11 years ago.
Yeah.
And Ian Schaefer, who's been tweeting.
Deep Focus.
He was like the number two tweeter when Twitter came out. Brian Weiner from 360i with Jennifer Preston from The Times are going to talk about this whole thing. Where do you take social media? How is it changing? But how can you monetize it? I'm not sure there's an answer, but it's certainly an important question.
It definitely is, and we'll figure it out. So it sounds like we're at a break, and it's going to get noisy here at Transformation 2010. Mike, thank you so much for calling me and telling me you were going to be in town and coming on back on Dishy Mix. I always love to see you
anytime,
and hear you.
Anytime. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. It was my pleasure. All right. That was Mike Donahue with the 4A's. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I'll talk to you next week. Have a great day.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.